Radio Misterioso. That was I'm Afraid by the Mystic Knights of the Oingo Boingo. Tonight we've got more ghost hunting. It seems to be a recurring theme these days, which I don't mind because it's always been UFOs, and there's so many connections. Why, Walter, why don't you introduce this guest who you found and can't wait to talk to.
Okay, yeah. Well, while I was working on the article that kind of blossomed into our book thing we're doing, it was very logical to look into hauntings at Disneyland. And I was in a Yahoo group, and this is where I met our guest, Marla James. And she and her husband are paranormal investigators based in Orange County. And she was very instrumental in providing me with some great info on hauntings, deaths at Disneyland, related haunting activity, and some stuff in general in the Anaheim area. So she has been a valuable... Excuse me, I suddenly have a cough. The ghosts don't want me talking about this, I guess. So anyway, Marla, you there?
I'm here. Hi, Greg. Hi, Walter.
Hello. Hello.
Hello.
I'll tell you what, the best thing to do is for you to tell us and the listeners about who you are in your own words and how you and David got into this and what you're doing now.
Not in somebody else's words.
Well, actually, I had always had an interest in paranormal, and I actually went to school and, you know, got to high school, went to college, and at that in those days you could major in paranormal sciences as part of the psychology department, and because of a grant, which they don't give anymore.
Which school was that?
UCLA.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right, because Thelma Moss used to be there. I bet she had a hand in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, so I just went out and did my thing, and I met David years later, and he was head of a different psychic single group, and we met and fell in love at first sight, and it was investigating from there on.
Great. Now
so he's been my partner for the last 16 years.
Now, have your investigations over the years, are they primarily California, Southern California, or what's the scope of what you guys have accomplished?
No, we've done a lot, and we've got done some up in Washington State. We did the Lost City of Wellington up there, and We've done some in Nevada, and in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of roam all over.
Yeah. You know, I think you told me about the Lost City a little bit. Could you tell us again about that a little bit?
Yes, 1913, and there was a city called Wellington, which was one of the last stops before Seattle on the train, and at that time, it was snowing a lot, and Wellington is in, like, a bowl. And the train was under a snow shuttle, or a snow a shelter. And the train company was kind of forcing the engineer to go on to Seattle for time purposes. And they moved the train out of the tunnel and onto the tracks. And it caused an avalanche in the whole city of Wellington. Everybody died in the avalanche in a matter of seconds, along with the people on the train.
It's kind of like a northwestern version of Pompeii, but with snow instead of lava.
Yeah, it just it happened very, very quickly. And the city is very hard to get to now. It's part of the park system.
Mm-hmm.
Federal park systems, and we were invited in to do this, and you have to get there by Jeep and then go over this log over a waterfall and kind of walk over that and go about a mile or so, and then you're in kind of wilderness area, so it's really hard to find. It's near Skykomish, Washington.
What was the extent of your investigation there, and what any phenomena you'd turn up? Or?
We use an infrared camera. We use one of the cameras that were banned and recalled by Sony because they
You could see through people's clothes.
They would photograph through clothes.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
And it's a great camera. But we used those, and we got a lot of orbs. These are kind of lights on kind of like a circle, a sphere of light.
You got these on the infrared?
But you can't see it with your naked eye. You can only see it in the infrared or through digital photography.
That's interesting.
Pardon me?
I said, now that's interesting, because that I haven't, about the orbs, I've not heard this about ones where people pick them up only on the infrared. That is significant, isn't it?
I'll have to show you some. I had one that came right up to the camera lens and then flew away.
Ah, well, you see, this is different. There was an article that I read recently in the Journal of Scientific Exploration, which is a truly skeptical journal. They actually look at things. Scientists look at anomalies and say, is there something to this or is there not? Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't, which is why I respect them. They used four or five different digital cameras, and the ones that were the cheapest ones got orbs, and the most expensive ones didn't. And they said this worked without fail in their test, but they looked at other instances where things like moving orbs and things, I think, actually on infrared were caught, and they said, we really don't have any explanation for this one, but we think we have a pretty good idea what's going on with digital cameras. It's because of the number of lens elements in the camera. The more you have and the better coded they are, the less orbs you get.
Right, but the idea is that you can take a digital picture and the infrared at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see anything with the eye, but mm-hmm. both pictures come out with the orbs in the same place.
Right, okay.
It's not a light, because there was no light. Not even the moon was out that night. So.
Well, like I said, it doesn't work in every case. They said it's not completely explained.
You should see what we use for taping EVPs.
Mm-hmm.
We use a children's play school tape recorder.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what you use, does it?
It really doesn't. We actually get the best. We put this against a lot of expensive equipment. And we found that we get more voices on this, especially children's voices.
Ah, well, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
Because
that's
it's
interesting.
Very colorful and it's not scary.
Uh huh.
And we tell them what to do, where the microphone is. It's really easy for them to see, find whatever they do to get their voices on the tape. But we do get voices on the tape.
Wow.
Did you get any when you went up to Washington there?
We didn't. We didn't, but some other people did.
Uh-huh. Why were people interested, paranormal researchers interested to go, ghost researchers, haunting, interested to go to this town? Had somebody reported something that made you interested in it?
It had been because of the circumstances that took the people. It had been rumored that this place was haunted.
Mm.
So they just wanted to find out if it really was.
Who's they?
The Park Service.
The Park Service,
the Park
really?
Service. That's impressive.
Yeah, it freaks them out. You know, sometimes, you know, I've worked with like the Catholic Church, the Santa Ana Diocese.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they called when I was back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
They would call us in for a consultation before they did an exorcism on a house. So. To see if it was, because the first rule of paranormal investigation is look for the normal before you look for the paranormal.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we have found, you know, like strange noises attributed to the water pressure was too high.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
You know, or a strange smell in the living room, and my poor husband has to go under the house and find the dead animal.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, we look for rats in the attic and bugs in the walls, and we try to use equipment that anybody can buy,
mm-hmm.
you know, like for electrical impulses. We could use an AM radio on a white band.
Right, right. That sounds like the stuff that, what's his name, Raymond Cass was doing back in the 60s.
Yeah,
the British guy.
Mm-hmm. We try to make it as simple as possible.
Marla, on the case in Wellington, I'm guessing that right after this disaster happened, they went in and they, in trying to rescue people, they retrieved all the bodies and cleared the town out?
Yes, they did. They all the bodies went to Skykomish. There was a hotel in Skykomish mm-hmm. where all the bodies went, and we actually stayed in that hotel.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Did you look around there, too?
It was an old brothel.
Perfect.
Yeah, there was really nothing. You know, sometimes you go out and there is nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That happens a lot.
What was your ultimate assessment or opinion of Wellington?
I thought it was a really neat place, but, I couldn't come to a conclusion that it's haunted or there's a ghost because we really don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know what an orb is. We can assume mm-hmm. What an orb is, but we really don't know. And same with if anybody asked me what a ghost is, I really couldn't tell you
mm-hmm.
because nobody really knows.
Do you have a few guesses?
I have guesses, you know, because of the communications we get and the information that we get from the communications and some of the things that happen in places, we can take guesses as to who it is or what it wants. We don't get rid of them. That's one of the things. We don't exorcise ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
We just identify them, and it's up to the owner of the house to actually get rid of them once they know who it is or what it is. A lot of times they want to keep them.
I was going to ask that. I mean, they don't want to get rid of them in every case.
Right, right. And it's up to the owner of the house to order this thing gone, and most of the time that it goes away.
Mm-hmm. Have you investigated many cases of a ghost that attaches itself to the person and goes where they go over the years?
Like the case of the incubus? No, I haven't.
Which
incubus? The one from the entity one from
the one that Taft did, Barry Taft did.
Right,
The woman went to Texas afterwards,
and it followed her. And apparently,
and it followed her.
Yeah, Richard Sennett said
basically she didn't want to get rid of it.
Really, even though it attacked her.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that like the attention that they get, and you know, it's a psychological thing.
Yeah, which may be wrapped up in why it's happening to her in the first place.
Right.
Yeah, what did she attract, you know?
Wow.
You know, and it may not have been a ghost. It may have been what
a projection
we consider
or something
to be a poltergeist mm-hmm. type of activity or incubus succubus activity,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, it is in a sexual nature, but sometimes it's caused by the person itself.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
As the manifestation of the mind. We had a case of that in Fountain Valley.
Really? Tell us about that one.
There was water squirting out of the walls of a house. And
Fountain Valley makes sense.
It was hot on the woman of the house and cold on the man of the house. And we found out that this was a new blended house,
mm-hmm.
Two divorced parents that got together. And there was a little seven-year-old in the house. And when she was asleep, this would happen. So we had to basically let them know to make her aware of what was going on, and the activity stopped.
Really? Make her aware that she was drawing it herself?
Well, we didn't want to scare her. She was a little girl, so we had the parents do it. You know, we had the parents let her, you know, find out what the problem was. You know, she really didn't like her stepmother.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
You know, and thus the hot water would come out of the walls, and there were no pipes in the walls where the hot water came from.
That's eerie.
Did the water just manifest itself at the wall surface and kind of shoot out?
Yeah.
And there weren't any stains or anything on the walls?
No stains on the wall was wet, but there weren't any stains.
Huh.
Wow.
How long did this go on? It sounds like a typical poltergeist thing. When the problem is taken care of, it stops.
Yeah, it went on for about 6 months.
Oh, that's kind of a long one, isn't it?
We they didn't really call us. They didn't think it was, you know, they didn't know what it was. And, you know, they had a priest come in and bless the house, and they tried everything they could before they called us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything that was logical.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Before they found, you know, we thought it might have been artesian wells because there were artesian wells. That's where Fountain Valley gets its name from.
Yeah, they have a lot of those throughout other areas of Southern California.
Yes.
I know they had them out in San Bernardino. That used to happen into the 80s. I haven't heard of a story recently, but my dad had a client in the middle of their office. They came in one morning, and an artesian well had burst its way through the foundation of the building and up through the tile and everything and just flooded. I mean, and it's astonishing, the power, which goes to show you the things that are in, you know, nature out there. Well, Marla, going back into your own past, did you ever have any personal experiences in childhood or in your teen years with what you thought were spirits or hauntings?
See, in my family, that was very normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom and my mm-hmm. grandmother could do that, you know, could see things. I was empathic
mm-hmm.
as a child, so mm-hmm. I could feel what people felt. I know when the phone rang who it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell my parents if they were going to a sneak preview at the movies, what the sneak preview was going to be.
Wow.
You know, stuff like that.
I wish you could have told me today how bad The Return with Sarah Michelle Gellar was before I saw it, because, oh, my God.
But, which one?
The Return. You know, the one with the preview where the hands are coming out of the walls and it looks really creepy? None of that is
like
in the movie. None of that is in the movie. I tell people, if you haven't seen this movie and you want to see a spooky movie, don't see this movie. But anyway, that's beside the point.
You don't watch creepy movies and yet you investigate ghost hauntings.
Because she knows how real this stuff is.
Well, I have enough of it in my real life.
You know what?
I mean,
actually,
I've been thrown across the rooms. I've had 3 concussions. You know, I've had my shoulder dislocated. You know, so it's not always the safest thing to do.
I haven't heard of that happening to investigators, at least that getting so involved. Why do you think that happens to you?
Well, I know that when I dislocated my shoulder, we were doing the work for the Santa Ana Diocese, and this was the house of a triple murder. A man had murdered his wife and his mother-in-law in the house.
Wow.
He hated women. And there were 3 men in our group and 3 women that went to this investigation and 1 priest.
Uh-huh.
And thank goodness we had the priest with us. I got to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was setting up some motion sensors in a hallway with 2 big men. And the other 2 women were at the table talking to the people that own the house with the priest and another man.
Mm-hmm.
And at the exact same time, I got pulled into a room, like somebody was grabbing me. And the other 2 men that I were with, they were kind of having a tug of war with me kind of between the rooms. And the 3 of us got thrown into a corner. I mean, we just got picked up, and I'm not a little girl. We just got picked up and thrown across the room, and I dislocated my shoulder. And at the same exact moment, the other 2 women who were sitting at the table, one of the women had like somebody with blades on their hand,
mm-hmm.
Went right down her back.
Ooh!
And she got deep lacerations on her back, and the other woman had her Achilles tendon severed.
Oh.
And had to have surgery that night. And we went to the emergency room, and thank goodness we had the priest with us, because when they asked what happened to us,
mm-hmm.
and we tried to explain it to them, they just kind of looked at us like, you know, it's time to cause a psych ward.
Why do you how is it that these spirits seem to display this, extra human strength that they obviously probably did not have in their physical existence?
Well, this person actually did have a lot of strength, and he hated women, and he had a lot of rage.
How long had it been since he was...
I think it was probably the rage.
How long had it been since he was deceased, or how did he die?
He died, I believe he died in a police suicide type of thing, where they came and they actually had to shoot him.
Oh, okay.
And he died on the premises, And so the three people died in that one play.
Oh, so the third murder was his own.
Yeah.
Okay.
The actually, what happened to the property is it was the people moved out, the place was shut up, it was taken over by gangs, and then it was razed. It actually burnt to the ground,
mm-hmm.
and there's been nothing on that land since.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, that's valuable Santa Ana property. But
were you in there when there was a structure there? I guess you were.
Yes, yeah, we were in the house.
And then it burned down later.
Yeah.
How did it burn down?
A couple of years later.
Did somebody just, you know, did somebody just go crazy and light a fire?
They think it was either a gang member or transients that the fire that raised the place to the ground. But, you know, it's unusual that a property goes that long without
being sold
here in California.
Why were you called in there? Was there somebody living there at the time?
Yes, there was a couple living there.
Oh, okay.
And we were called in by the Catholic Diocese.
That's right. You did say that, but not about who somebody was living there. Okay.
It's interesting.
Yes.
You
mentioned last week something in Redlands that you did.
Walter did.
Yes, the Barton Mansion, which I was, you know, on the internet looking for local things because at the moment I'm out in Highland, and I was just looking for local things for Sierra and I to go look at. And I found that there was Barton Mansion out by the Osistencia, which I knew about the Osistencia for years. Everybody who lives out there does, but I was unfamiliar with the mansion. And built in the 1850s. And apparently, according to this website, at least as late as 2003, it was considered one of the most haunted spots in the whole state. I don't know if that's dubious or there's some integrity to that claim because I had never heard of it. But nonetheless, they had some very interesting imagery that they claim they captured on video there. So we went – pardon?
Yeah, my husband and I did – we were invited to a private mansion in that same area. And this was there was one woman who lived there by herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that, you know, and when she had women over in the living room area, mm-hmm. their bodies would get pinched.
Well, this was this house apparently was unoccupied for years and years,
uh-huh.
because the way they described it, you know, it was all ramshackle and just, you know, disrepair and such.
This place was in good condition.
Well, you know, Redlands apparently
has excellent condition.
Yeah,
we went to, but what was really strange here is when we did a preliminary investigation of this mansion, and we took two men and two women, including me and my husband, into the house. We knocked on the door, and she opened the door. The first thing that happened was a little boy in a sailor suit came. You know, I was the first one in the door, and he stomped on my foot. And he ran after the cat. And I said, "Did you see that?" And my husband and the other man did not see it, but the other woman who was with us did see it.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman who was living in the house said, "I was wondering why my cats were acting so funny."
Wow.
Because this little boy was chasing them. When we investigated afterwards, we found that the little boy died in the 1918 flu epidemic.
Oh. Yeah.
And, you know, he was buried in a sailor suit.
Oh.
And the man who was pinching the lady's bottoms in that house, we went up to the second floor, and I took a Polaroid picture from the second floor,
mm-hmm.
Balcony, down onto a grassy knoll.
Right.
And when the picture came out, there was a fountain, a brick fountain,
mm-hmm.
and a brick walkway with blood on it. That wasn't there. It was actually torn down. It used to be there, but it was torn down in the 1970s. And mm-hmm. We found out the man had gotten drunk and jumped off the second balcony into the fountain and missed. And we actually got it on film. And then the other thing that happened in that house is we did a taping in the living room, And we left the tape recorder on, and we left to make sure that there was no noise mm-hmm. in that room. We left it for an hour. When we played the tape back, we had music.
Right.
People, there was a party going on. We called it the partying house
mm-hmm.
Because there was a party going on. You could hear glasses clinking and people talking and a piano playing and people singing. And,
wow.
And of course, nothing was going on. You know, mm-hmm. there was no noise.
What kind of songs? I mean, when did this happen?
It was in the late 20s.
Oh, okay. Because sometimes, in our interview last week, we found out that that some people do something called baiting, I guess, where they'll play music related to the time when they think the haunting is from, and that seems sometimes to encourage activity.
Sometimes, but this activity was just there.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was great. It was very, very, it felt really good.
Marla, what's the most disturbing haunting investigation you've done? The one that really stays with you as the scariest.
If you haven't mentioned it yet, yeah. They all sound kind of creepy.
Yeah, the guy banging you against the wall sounds pretty bad.
There was also one in Big Bear that we did, and that one it was a house of a psychiatrist, and he couldn't figure out why things were happening in the house, and we had taken a break. We were spending the night in the house, and we had set up our equipment, and we were taking a break in the kitchen. And I was leaning against the counter and, you know, waiting for the coffee, and all of a sudden, all of the cabinets opened up in the kitchen,
mm-hmm.
and it got me right in the head. I was out.
Wow.
So that was kind of scary, but I'm glad there was a doctor there, you know, but
yeah.
I had a concussion from that.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was hard enough where, you know, it did hit my head.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
That was kind of scary.
What was the story behind that? Did you find out?
No, actually we didn't. We didn't find out what was going on in that house.
Hmm.
You know, so it could have been something that he brought with him.
And you weren't aware of any history in the house. It was
No, he had no idea.
And if he brought it with him, it would indicate...
Sometimes we just don't know. You know, we try and find out. We try to do the research behind it. Look at the local papers, see if there's ever been a murder, anything. But, you know, not all ghosts are ghosts.
Right, right.
We had talked about that before.
Right.
There's a regular haunting and a residual haunting.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference?
We call these the smart and the stupid ghosts. Okay? The residual hauntings are like an endless loop tape. The ghosts will do something that they would have normally done in their day.
Mm-hmm.
Come down the stairs or do it on a regular basis. They
right.
do basically the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't interact. That's mm-hmm. the main thing, is they don't interact. And a irregular haunting, you might get the interaction. Things happen, you know, we were in one house and there was in the garage a racetrack, you know, with little cars on it.
Mm-hmm.
And the race cars were going around the track and we found out it wasn't plugged in. You know, that's
okay.
A natural haunting, but something like we were talking about the hauntingest place in California.
Yes.
Is actually the Whaley House in San Diego.
See, that's the one I've heard of as being the most haunted.
And that is a residual haunting. A residual mm-hmm. haunting happens when something traumatic happens
mm-hmm.
in that particular location.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where you can get doppelganger. Which means it's a double.
Right.
Okay, because people were seeing Mrs. Whaley's ghost coming down the back stairs
mm-hmm.
before she even died.
Really? Okay.
She lived to a ripe old age. I think she died in her 80s.
Yeah.
So she was projecting this image, perhaps.
They were moving the courthouse to downtown San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband was very much against it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when he was out of town one day...
Oh, they came and took all the records.
They came to get the records.
Hmm.
And she ran down the back stairs. And you can actually see her image running down the back stairs and smell her perfume.
I smelled her perfume when I was there. It's the only time in all my stuff writing for Weird California.
Is it
that
nice?
I actually,
was it floral,
yeah, it was lavender
fruity,
perfume.
Lavender.
And it was,
oh, nice.
It was very. Yeah, it was very light too.
It's on a regular basis, and that's the residual haunting.
Hmm.
You know
that,
what?
That happened. You know, and some residual hauntings are fun and happy things that happen, and that gets us back to Disneyland.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of ghosts around Disneyland. We actually had the opportunity to do an investigation at Disneyland one time, and this was before Disney. This was when Disney was still owned by Disney.
Yes, the family.
Okay? Uh-huh. They no longer allow it.
Right.
It's
as far as they know.
So you kind of have to do it in secret.
Yeah.
But we were invited in. And mm-hmm. we were actually, after they had closed, it wasn't dark in there. It was very bright in there after they closed.
Uh-huh.
Because they're cleaning.
Right.
And we were able to go in, and there was the fire station was the area that we were asked to come in, because Disney's ghost has been seen in the fire station and walking up and down Main Street. You know, and they were interested.
Right.
And, you know, the apartment is very kind of, it's a small apartment, but it's very, you can go in and you can feel it. You really can feel something in there.
The one that's over the firehouse there on Main Street?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, there's also a couple of other places that, you know, although Disney reports there's only been a total of 9 deaths in the park.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You know, and that's for 50 years of operation. That's a pretty good, you know, track record.
Yeah, but you were telling me when we talked before that mm-hmm. They have this interesting little trick they do where they have the death actually declared at Anaheim General.
Yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. they will take, you know, if somebody has a heart attack or something, they will take them to Anaheim General, and they will call the death there.
Mm-hmm.
So the death is not on the premises.
But the spirit left the body.
And they even have paramedics and everything. They had to do this after an accident happened and there was only a nurse. And mm-hmm. they didn't want to let the paramedics in because it would have really made everybody's day a bummer.
Sure.
So somebody actually bled to death after a knife fight in Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, so they changed. Now they have paramedics there, but they kind of blend in.
They're dressed like Goofy and Pluto or something?
Kind of undercover.
Undercover, yeah. Kind of like the security guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so the other guests don't know that there's a problem.
Did they? When they called you in, were they just interested in the Walt Disney sightings or hauntings or whatever, or other things too?
Well, at that time, it was just the Walt Disney sightings.
Mm-hmm.
They just wanted to see.
Do you know of anything else that goes on there related to the deaths there? Or maybe not, because Walter has told me there's hauntings in the Haunted Mansion.
There are.
Just because that's because it's what it's called.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's also Disney's ghost has been seen above the Pirates of the Caribbean in the gallery area. And that used to be his office.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And his ghost is seen there. There's ghosts that are seen on Tom Sawyer's Island. A little boy is seen over there.
Oh, because some kids have drowned, like, trying to swim across there after they closed.
Well, it was actually not after they closed. It was during business hours, and it was on grad night.
Oh, okay.
So there were two people. There was actually a total of 3, I believe, that drowned.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In the rivers of America.
Yes. We talked about that a couple of weeks back. It was shortly after I first talked with you the first time, Marla Boggs and Delarue. And you know, recently when I went about a month or so ago collecting info for the book, I naturally went over to the island and took a stroll into the back area there where the fort is, which, by the way, Fort Wilderness is officially closed. If anyone didn't know that, it closed not to be open again unless they incorporate it into the new Pirates theme that Tom Sawyer's Island.
There are rumors that they're going to change that into a Discovery Island or something.
Yeah, it's going to be Pirates of the... It's going to be Jack Sparrow's Island.
Oh,
from what we learned. But, you know, the trail back there, it's interesting. The trail back there hardly anyone seems to wander back there. And, you know, I would imagine that that would be a good spot to maybe run into one of these hauntings back there. And what I noticed was there's a pioneer cemetery in the back behind the fort.
Ah.
And they very, with some wit, very cleverly put one empty grave with a blank or no stone. I guess it's, you know, kind of a little, it could be you kind of thing, or, you know, who's next? But, yeah, it was interesting. I would imagine that back corner, if you worked there and were doing cleanup after dark, like we had talked, you know, the employees who don't like going over there.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, maybe you can talk about that here.
Well, it's just you know, that they don't like going over there.
Even today?
they get weird feelings. They don't feel comfortable.
Even today now?
On that island.
Recently, too?
Pardon me?
Recently as well?
Well, I haven't been in touch. They really don't talk about it much now.
They're too corporate.
I think they are told not to.
Right.
Yeah, they're too corporate. You know,
yeah.
Hopefully some stuff will change now that Mr. Eisner's been gone. So, you know, I think what's unfortunate about that is, you know, that there are interesting things that go on there, and you know, it's the bottom line dollar is why they, you know, we don't want to spook anyone. We don't want to scare anyone. And,
no, and you know, the city of Anaheim backs them because they
sure.
get a lot of money from the city of, or to the city of Anaheim.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. Well, hey, tell us, what do you know about the historical, perspective on hauntings in the Anaheim area other than Disneyland?
Well, we do a lot in Orange County, you know.
Countywide, then, yeah.
There is a place, the Learning Light Center is mm-hmm. haunted. That's a very haunted place.
The one that's right next to the 5 freeway there?
Yeah. No, it's not. Actually, it's off of, what is it off of? Lincoln. It's off
of okay.
Lincoln.
I was thinking of that Science Center, whatever, that has that big glowing cube on it.
Hmm.
But it's not that one.
This is a small church. It's near the original Pancake House.
Hmm.
on Lincoln, and they do a lot of paranormal stuff. They have a lot, like they have psychic fairs once a month there.
Mm-hmm.
They have religious services every Sunday, and it's just a very happy place. A lot of very good feelings there, mm-hmm. and quite a few spirits just stay there.
Hmm. Have you personally investigated or encountered anything there?
Yeah. Yes, I have. Yeah. We were with the group there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
They have a paranormal group
mm-hmm.
that works out of the church. We were there for a while. We decided we didn't like working with groups. We like working individually.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And I really don't do much in the field anymore. I do mostly like consult. Because I just lost my leg, so kind of hard to go under houses and do the investigations properly without a leg.
Well, until they make those bionics cheaper, right? And then
yeah. I'm learning how to walk again. I just had this done in June because of an infection. So
oh yeah, well you know you'll be up and doing, you know how things with technology is these days.
Oh
you'll
man,
be up
I'm going,
you know
I'm going to the gym twice a week already.
There you
go. And you'll be fine.
Oh yeah, I'll be fine. I'm actually better off. I'm not in any pain.
We'll have you up there exploring the what, the Bailiwick or the what was that, Willyback, Billywack?
Not the Billywack monster.
Not the Billywack monster. We won't go up there. So.
I don't know unless you're interested.
How about Clark Gable's ghost?
The one that is, where is he seen? Is that you
told me about this one. This is good. This is up by State Line, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's actually.
Yes, I've heard of this.
Eugene, Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
The place where that has the boat. You get off the freeway at that exit, and you just go about 30 miles on a dirt road past an old cemetery into a town called Good Springs.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the way to Sandy Hills, I believe. This is the town that it's near.
Uh-huh.
And kind of like almost halfway to Pahrump, taking the back roads.
Yeah.
And there's a saloon there called the Pioneer Saloon. And they often, amongst their other ghosts, you often see Clark Gable's ghost, because right behind the Pioneer Saloon is the area where the Carol Lombard's plane went down in the 1940s. And it took them 3 days to get her body down from, because it was a snowstorm up there.
Uh-huh.
And it took them 3 days to get her body down, and he just got drunk in the saloon, and they used the saloon as a morgue, and they brought her body down. And what you see there is a residual haunting. You know, his ghost isn't really there, but it's seen.
It's an image of him when he was there because of the emotions that he went through while there, the trauma.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that you see in a lot of places. You know, and we've been a lot in the Hollywood area and Hollywood Hills area and stuff like that. You know, it's been really satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
Although I would have loved to write a paper or written a paper or done more in that sense in investigations. But you know, in the last 20 years or 30 years, they've done so much just digital photography has really made an improvement in paranormal investigating, because you know, in some of the equipment that we use, like the temperatures, you can get an instant temperature now by throwing a laser, you know, against the wall and getting a temperature reading in certain areas, and you know, we see temperature fluctuations of about 5 to 10 degrees when there's a haunting or when there's activity.
Okay, and it jumps, it spikes. It jumps, it spikes in the temperature just real quickly, and then
it either goes down or up.
Mm-hmm.
It can go either way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of the things that we find commonly, and it feels like, I mean, sometimes you can even see your breath. It gets that cold.
Oh.
But the actual temperature only goes down about 5 to 10 degrees.
That's spooky.
You know, it's just a weird phenomenon. I don't know why, but it happens.
What is the best visual manifestation you have ever witnessed?
I mean, the best one was up in Skykomish, Washington, when there was an orb, and I photographed it going from the roof. It came right up to my camera lens, and then it flew away.
Now, you saw this with your own eyes.
I saw it in the camera, you could see it as it was coming on the camera, and I actually have a copy of the pictures. I'll show you them when we get together.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I want to see
it. It's
that.
A video. It's actually a video, so you can actually see the thing come down. Mm-hmm. You can see through it. It's perfectly round.
Mm-hmm.
It's about as big as a human head.
Mm-hmm.
It comes right up to the camera like it wants to know what I'm doing, and then it just flies away.
What color was it? You said it was
It wasn't a color. It was just a bright light.
Okay.
Yeah, it's infrared. It just looks like a black and white image.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you could see it with your clear eyes, it should have, like, lit up the place.
Mm-hmm.
And lit up the people around it, but it didn't.
Have you, I'm just doing a brain dump here. Yes. Have you done any? My mind went back to Disneyland and EVP for some reason. Among the things you've tried at Disneyland or would recommend others try, do you think EVP would work there as well as anywhere? I mean,
no.
It's pretty loud there. There's ambient noise.
There's too much noise.
Right.
When we look at EVPs, we try to be quiet when we do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one thing that when you watch that Ghost Hunter show, you have people talking in the background when they're trying to tape.
Thank you. That one struck me as, you know, I keep wanting to say, tell these guys, shut up, because...
Yeah, it drives me crazy. It's like you're not supposed to do that. And if there's the only time you're supposed to speak is like if you hear a car driving by, you say, car. So that they know that's an actual sound outside.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't get any better results by trying to ask questions or anything like that?
We don't get better results, but we get different results.
Right, okay.
I'm okay with asking questions when they, if they just say, "Hey, who's in the room?"
We try to keep the questions to yes and no.
Yes, exactly.
Because it's just easier mm-hmm. for them. It takes a lot of energy to do this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think the scariest time we were in Glendora, and we had a film crew with us, mm-hmm. and we were doing an EVP, and we couldn't hear the other side, and we asked some questions, and you know, we asked if anybody was there and who was there, and all of a sudden on the tape you heard "help me," and then immediately after, in a little girl's voice, and then immediately after you heard "no" in a big man's voice.
Ooh.
And the sound man pulled off his headphones and ran out of the room and ran out, you know, and would not come back in.
Yikes. That's impressive.
He heard it on his on whatever he was recording with, on
wow.
the boom.
Yeah, well, if he wasn't a believer before.
Yeah. You have to, I mean, he really wasn't a believer before. And sometimes we go in skeptical. Because we want to, you know, the first thing we have to do is we have to try to see if it's anything else. I mean, we look for
sure.
ham radios and,
sure.
you know, just all, anything, you know, you have an old transformer in the backyard, it can cause something called jump, where an electrical impulse can jump and jump into the house. You know, and cause a television to change stations, or mm-hmm. cause a radio to have weird noises on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be caused by a bad transformer in the backyard.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay. So, yeah, I know my mom's...
We look for the normal. We always look for the normal.
My
as
mom's...
As much as the normal as we can.
Sure. And
being who we are.
Oh, absolutely. I would imagine you have to for your bona fides. You know, you got to point this stuff out because,
yeah.
you know, there's always people out there ready to say, it's the plumbing.
We try and find anything.
Which is why I give credit to the guys on Ghost Hunters. They're, you know, I've heard criticisms that, oh, these guys are just plumbers. But, hey, they're plumbers, and they can probably identify, you know, a lot more things that actually are connected to plumbing that we would be spooked by. You know,
right.
So I think that's a pretty good background. You know, they can go in and at least identify with the plumbing, and on top of doing, you know, is there a dead animal here, or, you know, what is that? I would say a plumber, an architect, or you know, house builder, or whatever.
Well, I worked for many years at Thomas Brothers Maps and Cartography, so.
Yeah.
you know, I can read a map really well.
Well, and you can you know, being somewhat of a, you know, a topographer, and in effect, you can probably identify some things that have to do with natural things that might occur with the lay of the land and how they affect structures.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be really useful, I would think. What's your feeling on, now that this is popularized a little more, and, you know, anybody with a digital camera and tape recorders getting out there and doing this, do you think we're going to see more good evidence recorded and collected, or do you think it might have an opposite effect?
Well, I say yes and no to that, mm-hmm. kind of. Yes, it's great that people have an interest, and it's mm-hmm. great that people go out and do this, but I wouldn't suggest doing it alone.
Right.
You always have to have a partner, and, you know, I have a great partner, and mm-hmm. he covers my rear end, you know, a lot,
mm-hmm.
and I'm real comfortable with that. But, you know, you sometimes get into situations that aren't you're not ready for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can't just protect yourself with white light.
Right.
It doesn't always work. You know, and we don't do that. We just go in.
Yeah. You're going in to collect and report.
We don't do
report.
Anything supernatural. We
right.
don't use psychics.
Right. Okay.
You know, because that really kind of puts a kind of like opinion into it.
Sure. Sure,
it
makes it very subjective.
I use psychics, and I use my own intuition.
Right.
You know, and sometimes my intuition is wrong.
Well, that's why
you know,
you have...
I can say that, but you know, we've had this equipment for a few years, mm-hmm. and we still haven't gotten a good picture of a UFO.
Mm-hmm. True.
You know, so, you know, you never know.
Well, it sounds like we've discussed on the show that the cause of the phenomena, the beings involved, they know how far to stay back and when to, you know, go underground and draw away. And
When you're dealing with a haunting, you're dealing with something intelligent.
Yes.
And we don't know what it is, you know, and sometimes you're dealing with fire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you go in there, you need to, you know, kind of get an idea of what to expect. I mean, mm-hmm. the homeowners don't want to get sued if you're hurt.
Well, you know, you brought up something that I question, and you know, I'm going to refer to, you know, our Judeo-Christian tradition that many of us, not all of us, but many of us here in this part of the world, you know, grew up under. And you know, you see the movies and you hear people talk about, like you mentioned, you know, the white light, you know, bathe yourself in light and light and light. And you know, what's interesting is in the tradition, I seem to recall that the bad guy, the so-called bad guy, Lucifer, was the angel of light. And so that makes me think, okay, when you're doing a practical investigation into these things, it seems like you want to be armed with as much background and lore as possible. And to me, bathing yourself in the light when you've got an identified negative or evil, if you want to call it, entity that whose main title was, you know, an angel of light, I would wonder if that's when these psychics do this, if that's the best advice.
Well, also, when psychics go into a house, and I've been in quite a few groups that do this, mm-hmm. is they don't let you know what's going on in the house. They say there's a haunting here, we've had a problem, and that's all you're going to know. And you have to go in and give your impressions.
The psychics do this to you?
No. Usually the head of the group gets the phone call. So the head of the group maybe knows the information. And nobody else knows the information.
So that you have an objective experience going in there.
Well, basically they're doing it, kind of testing you to see if, well, do you jive or not jive?
Yeah.
You know, I believe that everybody should know right up front what's going on, especially if you're in a situation that can get dangerous.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
You know, so so I try and get background, as much background as I can, on anything I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, because I want to know what I'm getting into before I get into it.
I could see them maybe your first night in a house, your first run through. You know, if they want to make sure they're getting people that are, you know, the real deal, doing it the right way, having you go in there blind, not knowing anything, and then after you do the first one, see what you get, and then brief you in on all the pertinent details and have you do it again to measure the differences, you know, and so that you could capture more. But they don't seem to like to do that.
No, they usually, most of the groups that we've been through, and this is one of the reasons why, again, we don't like doing it with groups,
mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, you basically go in and you do your thing, and then you leave.
Right.
And you leave the people up in the air, and they don't go back. Generally, they don't go back again.
The investigators, you mean?
The investigators don't go back.
And that's because do these groups... do they kind of behave like the people in the UFO field, where they begin to assume an ownership of a particular haunted location, so to speak, an ownership?
Sometimes. Mm. Sometimes they do. Although, you know, there's times where I know of people that have done, I mean, different groups have gone in and done an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Into places, and we found out the person was actually kind of psycho. You
not know, psychic,
after
more
an
psycho.
Interview with her, we didn't even go out to the house, but then we found out, mm-hmm. a whole bunch of other people in the field,
mm-hmm.
had gone out there for the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she still never resolved it. So, you know, mm-hmm. we never knew what was going on with her house. So this was in Long Beach.
Mm-hmm. Wow. You
know, hey, Walter and Marla, we have to take a break so I can turn over my virtual recording here.
Oh, absolutely.
And when we come back, I find now that cliffhangers work with people that want to download the second part of the show.
Just please don't play Ghostbusters.
We promise.
I heard your Richard Bennett last week.
Yeah, well, I will never play that song on this show.
So when we come back, I'll expose even more.
All yeah, right. a paranormal revelation that Walter had in just the last few days here.
Yes, a revelation related to something that I did years ago. I'll share that when we get back.
All right. It's Radio Misterioso. We're talking with Marla. No, I forgot her last name. James. James. I'm sorry, Marla. And we'll be right back with Walter's story and this cliffhanger. You know what I'm going to play is Someone Walked Over My Grave by Criswell. How about that?
Sounds great.
Okay, here, try this on.
Someone walked over my grave, disturbing my sleep. A sleep that I thought would last through eternity. Over my grave, awakening me and bringing me back to reality. I walk now in a place that is filled with misery. In search of their simple destiny. Friends I've known and family I've loved will have to answer to me, for they let someone walk over my grave, awakening.
Someone walked over my grave. That was Jerron King Criswell, better known as Criswell from the Ed Wood movies and his psychic show on LA TV in the 1960s. It's Radio Misterioso. We're here with Ghost Hunter. Should I call you that, Marla?
Or Paranormal Investigator.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Paranormal Investigator Marla James. And Walter was going to describe some hanky-panky he had pulled in the last few years that has come back to haunt him, literally.
Yes, literally haunt me. So, okay.
And then we can ask Marla about it. And then probably in about 20 minutes here, we can open up if anybody wants to call in and ask a question or share a short story. Go ahead, Walter.
Okay. Well, the last couple of years, those of you who are regular listeners, you know me. You know what I do, what my past has been, and you've heard me speak of a particular mentor that I've had since the 80s. And this mentor not only was my professional mentor, got me into the intelligence biz, but has also very much been my spiritual and metaphysical issues mentor, you might say. From time to time, I will talk and share more about my experiences just because it seems appropriate, and as things develop with them, you know, I kind of want to share it because that's part of my way of trying to figure out the details I don't have, or maybe answer the questions I still have about stuff. So that's the spirit of what I'm doing here, and all I can tell you is this, all this stuff is the God's honest truth I'm telling you. So I have no way, of course, to prove it to you at this point in this forum. But last week, now I got to tell you that over the years, I have experienced presences in various places that I have lived. One of the strongest manifestations was while I was in Ohio, assigned to Wright-Patterson, living in Fairborn, Ohio, right there outside the base. This is in the Dayton area. And I lived in a small one-bedroom apartment. You walk in, there's a living room, and your dining room is one big room. And, you know, everybody who's ever lived in that situation can guess the layout. Well, I would have my computer. I had my computer set up facing a wall, and directly behind me was the little, I wouldn't call it a hallway, it was more like a little square area with a closet for the entryway to the bathroom and my bedroom. Now, over the couple of years that I lived there, I would hear little noises in the bathroom, and as if somebody was stepping on the floor here or moving something on the sink there. And I would literally feel, I would just feel and hear steps approaching me, walking right up behind me, and the person standing right behind me. It would make the hairs on my neck stand up. It was very, very real. I had heard that a male had committed suicide in the same apartment complex, and I'd heard this from somebody who'd been there for some years, and this person was related to the base. So I thought that maybe it was this male, but I went to one of the better psychics I've ever been, and I'm hard on psychics. I don't tell them anything. Their job is to tell me, and if they're good, they will. And there's been a few that have impressed me, and she was one, but she was the one that flat out told me, she goes, no, no, no. She goes, this is a female entity, and you brought it with you. And that kind of spooked me a little bit, but I have to say that the whole time I was living there, and I lived there alone, I never felt any negative vibe from this thing. It was simply there and sharing the place with me. This entity would never come into the bedroom, and I would never encounter it anywhere but in the bathroom and out in the living room when she would walk up behind me. So there was that. This was between 1997 and 99, so in Ohio. So then I leave Ohio, and off and on at my mom's house, whether I was staying there briefly or just visiting. Now, her husband passed away in 98 in the house. And since then, whenever I've been in that house, I will occasionally smell his pipe tobacco as if he's smoking. And I'm not the only one. Others will smell it off and on. You know, it's like, oops, hey, there's Wes. However, I would also experience, and I experience it to this day, if I came in late at night, a very, very spooky, scary feeling walking from the car to the front door, so much so that it feels like something is rushing up to my back as I'm approaching the door. There's been times where I just was scared to turn around and look. One night, early last year, my mom was out of town. I was in town. I stayed at her place. My sister lives up the road. Sometimes I stay there when I'm there. But I was supposed to stay at the house. And here I am, former federal agent, you know, anti-terrorism consultant, you know, stared down death in the Hindu Kush, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I got to tell you, I could not stay in the house. I was so spooked. I felt like if I looked at any windows, I would see a horrific face looking in at me, and it was outside the house. I felt that this thing was outside, and you know, it just was feeling negative things, and I assumed it was for me. But this one particular night, I had to go get a motel. I just couldn't stay in the house. I got to the car as quickly as I could and just went to a motel. Oh yeah. And so there's that happening at that house. Now, that's between 99 and the present. So anyway, last week I'm in Force Falls. I just wanted to give you a background so that you can know, you know, that this has been going on for a while.
Okay.
And this presence felt female. Now, my niece, she has said that she feels, she independently, I'd never told her this story, and about a month ago, she said that she feels creeped out and afraid to come from the house, from the car into the house, and will call and have one of us go out to the car, and she identified it as a female presence. So last week, I'm in Force Falls, and with my girlfriend, Sierra, and I see a tree that reminded me of a tree I encountered in an old colonial era cemetery in the early 90s on Long Island. At the time I was with the Bureau, I was living on Long Island. And this brings it back to I remembered something I did at the instruction of my mentor. And he taught me how to, I haven't talked about this much and never in a public forum, he literally taught me how to raise dead spirits. I wear the thing that he taught me. It's leather. It has knots in it. I won't say how many. I'm not going to go into the details of how you do this, but I was given very specific instructions on how to raise a dead spirit to get information. I can tell you how many years. I can go back. I can tell you how long the person's had to have been dead. And I can tell you that you have to select the opposite. I will say you have to select the opposite gender from yourself is how I was trained that this works. So I would go out there to the Colonial Era Cemetery on Northport, Long Island, after dark by myself and stand before, I selected one and I would stand before this gravestone and I would do this method. I would apply this method I was instructed on, and I never saw or encountered anything overt. I just went out there, and sometimes it was spooky, and sometimes, surprisingly, it was not. But it was, imagine a Tim Burton gothy horror film, and this is that cemetery. I mean, it's from the 1600s, 1700s, early 1800s are the newest graves. And, you know, the old flat brownstones and the scary gnarly trees. And this tree, there was a black tree with bright yellow leaves, because I would go in the fall, and there was a tree like this in Forest Falls, and it reminded me of this. Now, I've also talked about the place in Rancho Mirage where my girlfriend and I encountered a malevolent presence in our bedroom, so bad that for the first 2.5 months we lived there, we did not sleep in our bedroom. It got that bad. We would be in bed talking and just drifting off to sleep, and we would feel this thing right at the foot of the bed. And if we were intimate at all, it got more angry. We had a Japanese exorcist come in, and he definitely pointed out some things and said, yeah, there's something here. Well, he said it was female. So you're seeing the pattern here. And I told my girlfriend about this, and she kind of, you know, hey, dummy, we've been having this trouble with a female entity. We had trouble with the female entity at my mom's house and on back to Ohio. And I believe that what I did for a purpose I didn't mention, there was a purpose for doing this. I believe that I had some level of success out in that cemetery, and I've done some research, and I have a name. I believe I know who it is that has attached itself to me. That's as much in a nutshell as I can get it. I mean, it's been pretty creepy and scary at times. But
Marla, have you heard of anything like this ever happening?
Yeah, I have. I can't tell you how many times we get a call that the person says, we were just playing with the Ouija board.
Oh, no, not that again.
Yeah, I mean, it just, you know, we get so many calls like that, and it's like, uh-oh, what'd they do? You called in the spirit, you know, and you apparently mm-hmm. this one attached itself to you.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you own it. Basically, you want it, you can get rid of it, but you need to want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's,
you know,
the thing is that you need to really want to do it.
It's interesting that you say, you know, the other people, they don't want to get rid of it. I have already had thoughts of, well, how soon do I want to get rid of it? And I wonder, is that it influencing me? Is that her?
It could be. Maybe not. Who knows?
I would think maybe she's causing the grief.
I don't think that ghosts can influence thoughts that much, your own mm-hmm. thoughts. They don't possess you. They don't get through you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been to exorcisms, and mm-hmm. I've seen so-called possessions
mm-hmm.
of people where they believe they have you know, spirits inside. I mean, my degree is in abnormal psychology, so, mm-hmm. you know, it's, you know, you got to know this stuff, at least, you know.
Yeah.
some of the stuff. But, yeah, you know, I haven't really ever seen anybody who's really possessed by a spirit. I mean, really? You know, I'm not saying that can't happen. And I'm not, you know, the exorcists that I've been to looked very real, but I think the people were very influenced by other things.
Right.
Were they impressionable?
Very.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, I'm not saying that you are or anything, but, you know, I'm just saying that, you know, you brought it in and you can take it out, you know,
yeah,
that type
it's,
of thing, so, you know, if you want to.
Well, one thing that's interesting, too, is it seems like since I've consciously realized where it might have come from, it's almost like it, you might say it's calmed her down a bit, and it things feel less scary, though the presence is still felt.
Well, and a lot of times they just want your attention. They just want them, they're trying to tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to tell you who they are, maybe, and they want you to do research on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just so that you know
who they are
and what they are, mm-hmm. and you know, as long as you know that, they're okay with it.
Well, my girlfriend said that maybe she's saying, "Hey, dumbass, you woke me up 14 years ago. Let me go back to sleep."
Yeah, that's another thing. Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? My thoughts are that, you know, they're not asleep. You mm-hmm. know, or you know, we could be dealing with a different dimension.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm up for any type of suggestion.
We'll have to get together, and you can tell me some of the things I could do, or maybe you can investigate some of these manifestations. And,
I'd be happy to.
I've laid this on people a lot, including other investigators and things like that, with the idea, because I've talked to a lot of remote viewers, paranormal investigators, ghost hunters, UFO people, things like that, and I've got this idea that there aren't dimensions, but that's the way we have to talk about it because that's how we think. There's one dimension, all time, everything that's ever happened and will happen, it's contained in that, and we live in one aspect of it. And here we go using language again, and but at certain times, these things, the veil or whatever you want to call it, our categories rip apart, open up a little bit, yeah, and we will experience something that's not time bound because our brains can do that.
That's very true, and we've seen that. We've seen portals before.
Oh yeah.
In fact, we used to live in a place. We had a roommate that was mixing black magic with Indian magic, and he made something called a nightwalker. And there was actually a portal in one of our rooms that we had to actually have an Indian medicine woman and a person who is an expert in black magic come in and close this porthole because the room was freezing cold when you walked in. No plant would live in there, and our cats would not go near it.
Anything else weird going on?
And they would claw you.
Uh-huh. Anything else weird going on in there? Did any besides those manifestations?
Well, yeah. Have you ever seen a rose quartz?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a pretty warm rose quartz. Well, he had a large piece of rose quartz in that room, and it turned black.
Hmm.
Which they're not supposed to do.
That can't be good.
No. It was very bad. Very, very bad. Some people who were trying to help us got very, very ill, and one lady died who was helping us.
Well, this is one manifestation of something that's evil, and from the little bit that I know, that there's not so many, you know, outstandingly or obviously evil hauntings or manifestations. What's your take and experience with that?
With evil?
Yeah, just something that's just
not
good.
I've seen it. You know, I believe that there could be evil. Evil really doesn't exist in my dogma. So, you know, I don't think people are not really evil. I don't think so. But I've seen things that seem very evil to me.
Such as?
You know, that I can't explain. I don't feel very good, and this happened like 2 days before the L.A. riots.
So oh, really?
Something was in the air anyway.
Uh-huh.
Right before the riots. So it was a weird feeling.
But nothing obvious that you've seen or experienced, and if you did, how do you deal with such a thing?
Well, like I said, there's sometimes that you can't do anything about it.
Hmm.
You know, and sometimes
just
get
out
of
the
owner of the house what's going on, and it's up to them to do whatever
right.
they want to do with it.
Right.
Some people like living with evil. I don't know why, but they do. You know, so we let them know what's there. We don't really get rid of these, although there are groups and psychics that say they can.
Right.
I would never say I could because you really don't know.
Mm-hmm. What in the hell?
It doesn't work every time.
What in the hell are these things doing around people's houses, and how did they get there?
Well, you were talking about dimension.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you follow any theoretical physics,
mm-hmm.
There's a the gentleman that invented the string theory, Michio Kaku, believes there are 11 known dimensions. You know, according to his theoretical physics.
Uh huh. His theory, yeah.
That we know of. You know, and we don't know what we don't know. You know, so we there's a lot we don't know.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of the veil thinning in certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it seems very, very true that happens.
Are you familiar with Mitla, Mexico? MITLA.
Mitla.
Mitla. It's a village in Mexico where the ancient the very ancient ruins site is right there next to a Catholic church, and
I've been there.
Yeah, that church. They say that there's a certain night of the year that they will ring their bells, and that night of the year is when the veil, as they call it, is the thinnest, as we're just talking here, and they say that you're there. You can sometimes see the spirits of the dead all over the ruins.
I think it might be the Day of the Dead, which is the day after Halloween.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, that is it. It is the Day of the Dead. That they say literally they've had manifestations there.
They dress up as skeletons, in fact, so that the evil people or the evil spirits won't take them because they think you're dead.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So they dress up.
Yeah,
and that's basically the whole thing about Halloween too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's one reason. I went. I was in Mitla when I was 12 years old.
Oh yeah.
Ah.
Were you there at night?
No, and I wasn't there on Day of the Dead,
right.
Or All Souls Day.
I
was with a friend, and we were taking a tour of the ruins there, the Mayan ruins,
mm-hmm.
and we broke away from the group and sneaked into the underground tunnels.
Yes.
And I couldn't stay in there. I don't know what it was. It was exceedingly humid. I mean, to the point where I felt like I was in a sauna. Yeah. And we ran around in there for about 10 minutes, mm-hmm. and then we were afraid we'd get lost, so we came out.
Mm-hmm.
But there were light bulbs down there and everything, and one of the mm-hmm. gates was open. So we went down there. I mean, I don't know if it was something bad there or what, but or we're just nervous because we knew we shouldn't be there. But
yeah.
I just didn't really feel good about it the whole time. I felt like I was running around naked.
I kind of got that same feeling going through the Grand Canyon Caverns.
Oh, really?
I haven't
been there yet. It's the mm-hmm. it's that one you have to take the dirt road off of.
Yeah. We actually kind of took a side trip. My husband and I, basically for vacations, we like mm-hmm. to go places like Bodie and different
yeah.
places that we've heard had mm-hmm. hauntings
uh-huh.
and go find out for ourselves. Bodie is very hard to get to.
Yeah, it's a long drive.
And, you know, we just kind of go into small towns, ask them where they yeah. bury their dad. And you know.
Hey, Marla, why do you, in doing some research, kind of related for the book, I am virtually being ignored by the people out at, you know, the parks people out at Calico. You know, I talked with them when I was there, got a contact. I talked with the individual on the phone, and nothing. I mean, it's regarding, I wanted to go out there at nighttime and have one of them give me a tour so that it was safe, and maybe, you know, with digital video, still camera, and, you know, audio recorder. Have you tried to do anything at Calico, or do you know anything about Calico?
I know somewhat about Calico. There's a group in Nevada that, I got to remember the name, American Ghost Hunters Association, I think mm-hmm. it is, and I got a contact with them. Mm-hmm. They do go out there mm-hmm. every so often, because it's not too far from the Nevada border, so
right.
about 100 miles.
Well, they have spirit photos that in an adjacent area to the actual old western town. The the Native Americans do a particular dance, and they display photos there. If you go into the old-timey Photoshop, that show these weird light spirit entities connected to and flowing around where the Native American dancing is done.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that again can be caused by the Native American dancers.
Mm-hmm. They draw it. You're saying.
I've seen so many. Been really good friends with an Indian medicine woman,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen a lot of their ceremonies are just incredible,
mm-hmm.
and they're very, very powerful, and they're very, very, they have a lot of energy.
Ah, okay.
I wonder if there's a history of people, because you can't take pictures of these things anymore, obviously, mm-hmm. of the ceremonies, but I wonder if there's a history of, because you used to be able to, I wonder how many people have gotten weird things on their pictures when taking pictures of, you know, a dance or a Kachina procession or something like yeah. that.
I don't know. I haven't really been into that. I was doing a lot of research into the Arizona near Sedona.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there's a town called Jerome.
Yes.
Which is a very, very haunted town, and it's a very, very bad place.
Oh, is it bad. Really bad? Because I've been through there so many times.
My opinion, so I won't get sued, but yeah, it's a very, very bad place, owned by very, very bad people.
You mean not currently. Spiritually, but currently?
Currently, yes.
Oh, okay.
Ew.
No, it used to be owned by a silver company, but now they sold most of the town away. And you know how it's so funny, because we see that when there's something good energy, is good feeling, there's usually something bad around the corner. It's
really?
Kind of like the yin and the yang.
Mm-hmm.
And this place is a place with satanic cults.
Oh gosh.
Jerome?
Yeah, it's not a good place.
It looks like such a quaint touristy town. You know, before
it's a nice little touristy town. They have a nice little brothel there. Sometimes at night, you know, you don't want to go there.
Huh? Because
there's only one way in and one way out of town.
Yeah, that one road.
Yeah.
Unless you go running down one of the hills and break your leg. You know, about 20 years ago when I first went mm-hmm. I liked it better because there weren't all the little Christmas lights and art stores and all that. It was just a biker bar and a bunch of, like, burnout hippie artists just living and not really bothering with anything, and I kind of liked it that way. I don't like it now just because of the commercialism, but there may be another reason.
Well, you know that there was originally an Indian tribe. The Yavapai Indians mm-hmm. actually had that area, and in the late 1800s, they sent General Crook, C-R-O-O-K,
perfect,
to go and get rid of the Indians. And there was a second Walk of Tears. They made the Indians walk from that area to kind of the Four Corner area.
Mm-hmm.
So they made them walk a long way, and a lot of them died on the way. It was kind of a trail of tears.
Not good.
And it was just, you know, what they did to the Indians in that area is just horrible.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of, there's a lot left there.
A lot of residual negativity that remains? You know, you've intrigued me with where you said where there's a really good feeling place right around the corner is a bad place. That brings me back to Anaheim. With Disneyland there, what the heck is lurking in Anaheim that you're aware of that is on the dark side?
Oh.
There's got to be,
well,
right?
Like I said, you know, when you have something really, really good, there's usually something really, really bad around the corner.
She means time-wise, not space-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Not around the corner, walking around the corner, but around the corner, you know, next week or next month or next year.
Well, oh, I thought you meant
a
place.
I'm talking about, like, in the area.
In the area, place, you mean?
In the area.
Yeah.
You know, place. I don't know of a really bad place in Anaheim.
Ooh, we haven't found it yet.
No, we haven't found it yet.
You're going to go looking,
it could be in, you know, it could be in one of the neighborhoods, could be in Fullerton. Who knows?
Hmm.
Yeah, you know, somebody ought to know.
Somewhere close by. When you talked about the Longitude 33, or the Latitude 33,
mm-hmm.
and we talked, you told me about that, and, you know, that, I'm not sure where 33 ends and, you know, and the other begins.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about the, I think I sent you an email about the different areas of Latitude 33, that everybody in Latitude 33 has death penalty.
Whoa.
All the countries in Latitude 33.
What, around the world, huh? They
around the world.
Practice that.
And that's all the states that are on it?
Pardon me?
And all the states that include it, too.
Yes, all the
states. Well, it does run through the South.
And the Southwest. California has it, oddly enough. Wow. That is interesting. That is a very interesting observation. Yikes.
I just thought of something else with my Kachinas. I have about, I don't know, 12 or 15 Kachina dolls on a shelf. They're mostly cheap ones. I mean, cheap meaning they're not $300.
They're Kachina. Not authentic.
Yeah, no, they're authentic. I mean, they're made by the tribe. I bought them from the tribes. I never buy from anybody that's a middleman. I buy straight from the people at the reservation. But from the beginning, I've done that. But I noticed for a long time this scratching noise kept coming from the shelf where the Kachinas were. And it went on for like a year, and then when I moved, it stopped. And it was I'd be sitting there at 3 in the morning working on something, and I hear this. I'd look up at the shelf with the Kachinas, and they're all just standing there. And I looked to see if I wasn't pushing anything, and it was only coming from the shelf where they were. So
that's interesting.
You know, things can get haunted. That's one of the things that drives me crazy about going into any type of historical site.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the Newland House here in Huntington Beach.
Uh-huh.
That's a haunted place, but, you know, you don't know what's haunting it because they've gotten furniture in from the period.
Yeah.
And you get the feelings, you know, so many different conflicting feelings from different things in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Because they weren't original. They weren't from the original. They just were donated.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they were of that period so that they put them on display.
Oh,
and
wow.
That happens in a lot of historical homes.
Yeah.
You go in and, you know, you think you're going to get a good haunting here. And, you know, all of a sudden you're getting all kinds of things because you're getting things from books and from you know, tables and chairs.
Right.
Different things that are in the house.
Mm-hmm. And the ghosts are just wanting to get to know each other because they've come from all sorts of places.
Basically, yeah. But sometimes objects, you know, like things that can hold
people.
Time.
Oh. Hold what? Time.
Clocks.
Well, not clocks, but, you know, when we were talking about residual haunting.
Yes.
And having that endless loop.
Oh,
that
yeah.
That can happen with things.
Particularly a chair.
People can touch an item and get the whole history of somebody from just touching an item that belonged to them.
Psychometry, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that happen before, and it's really amazing to see.
You know, Marla, it's interesting. I'm reading Alexander David Neil's Magic and Mystery in Tibet, and I'm in the section where they're talking about the purba, the ceremonial knife, dagger, whatever, that's used in things to do with spirits and demons and stuff. And what brings to my mind...
I have one of those.
Yeah, well, what brings to my mind is there I was in Kabul, Afghanistan, and a gift shop is selling a purba identical to the purba in the Shadow movie from 1994, and I love that movie, so I thought, oh, look, a real purba. So, you know, hi. hi-ho, I bring it home from Afghanistan along with a haunted rug, the Japanese exorcist tells me. And I'm reading this thing in this book, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, if the rug was haunted, what's in this damn purba? Is it going to get up and start floating around the room? But I bring a lot of stuff home from around the world when I travel, and I don't... I guess there's a way to maybe determine if there's anything that came along with it.
Well, you look on the bottom and see if it's Maine, Japan.
well, most
well,
of it's
now
not.
Now it's China.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except maybe my coconut monkey that the exorcist told me to get rid of. But everything else was where I was, Africa, Afghanistan, you name it, all sorts of interesting places.
I promised earlier that people could call in, and if you want, yes. And if Marla doesn't mind, if people want to call in and ask questions, it's 213. Do you mind?
No, call me.
213-252-0998. 213-252-0998. And... we now have the facility to have the guest and a caller interact. So if you want to do that, go right ahead.
That is so cool.
Yeah, I haven't for a long time because we only had one line in. But now, for reliability's sake, I use my cell phone with a speaker to do the interview because I can't get cut off. And our phone here is unreliable. You say objects can be haunted. Yes, I've heard that. How do you get rid of an object haunting? Get rid of the object?
Get rid of the object. That's usually the best thing, the best way to do it.
But
the
I've
easiest
heard,
way.
But I've heard that you know.
But Walter likes his purba.
Yeah, I like my purba. But I've heard too, you got to be responsible about how you get rid of it. You can't just, you know. I actually called a paranormal investigative society based in Riverside about the rug, and the lady, one person told me just to throw it away. Another person said, oh, burn it. And then I had someone say, oh, no, you can't burn it because the energy will then go and be free to go anywhere. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I just want to.
Do any of these people know what they're talking about?
Do any of us know what we're talking about?
I hadn't heard of the energy going anywhere. I would have suggested burning it.
You would or would not?
I would.
Yeah.
Well, then the object isn't there for it to attach onto.
Guess what? I can't find the object now. I could have sworn I put it in storage and it wasn't there.
It walked off.
Oh, it could have disappeared.
I've just misplaced it.
Especially in poltergeist experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Where objects,
you know,
just disappear.
All of a sudden the keys are gone or you know, and then they show up later in some other place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that happens often.
I had a landlord when I used to live in, what's the name of that canyon that comes up from UCLA? Oh, ooh.
Coldwater?
No. I can't remember the name of it, but Elkie Summer lived on that street in a haunted house.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a landlord that took care of about four or five houses on that street, and he said one of the houses he kept finding pennies in drawers.
That's a neat thing.
Yeah, he said I would keep finding
them. Sometimes you get pennies from, like, back in the early 1900s or something. You know?
I asked him about that. He said they were recent pennies, but he was the only person in the house with access to it, and the pennies would appear after he'd cleaned them out and then went back the same day,
ooh,
you know, while he was still in the house. And eventually he had a jar full of pennies, and he found out there was a woman that used to live there that lived underneath the stairs, and she was a miser.
I have a pair of cufflinks that are actually made from pennies from 1889. But I haven't experienced anything weird while wearing them.
Well, not everything old.
That's true. Not everything.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also we've found hauntings in brand new houses.
Mm-hmm. You do what?
So we've had hauntings in brand new houses.
Yeah. Oh, of course.
The house doesn't have to be old to be haunted.
Particularly if the person brings it in. We have a caller.
Yes, we have a caller.
Hi, caller.
Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, great.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey,
did you have a question for Marla here?
Just a quick ghost story.
Go ahead.
A ghost story. A friend of mine has been haunted for quite some time by a little girl ghost who she used to leave tracks when he was in England and he went away. For some odd reason, she would leave her. I'd go over to his apartment and open up the door, and there would be little tracks, little girl tracks in the dust on the floor where she had been running around running up and down the stairs and running around the apartment.
Whoa, sorry.
That's all right. And when you, this is sort of a humorous observation, the one place where you said where, let me use the particular furniture, all the different furniture from different eras was being put together. You could have conflicting personalities, and one particular entity might not like the other particular entity's taste in furniture.
That's pretty good. Yeah, that's pretty true. We find that entities are like cats. I kind of like put everything to cats. You know, you have an alpha cat, and the alpha cat runs everything in the house. And you basically do have alpha ghosts.
Hmm.
You know, and they don't always get along. But particularly children, the ghosts of children are great, except when they're having temper tantrums. You know, that at that time you can get things thrown at you and other things, you know, because they're only kids.
I just wanted to throw that out there. I just thought I'd call in and say hello.
Okay, thanks so much, Carl. Our faithful listener and always something interesting to say. And please call back.
All right.
Yeah, we were, there is
thanks,
a
Carl.
Place here in Orange County that's called the Tribuco Triangle. That's very interesting.
Huh. Tell
and
us about it.
There's been a couple of... last year, I think there was a couple of deaths, and the people, they couldn't figure out why these people died. They just, they're looking up at the sky, their eyes are open, and they're dead. And there were two incidents of this, and there was also a plane crash in the area, a small plane crash.
Oh, okay.
In the area. That's where Saddleback Mountain is.
Yeah.
Around that area.
Okay.
But you know, there's been a lot of sightings of UFOs in that area and stuff.
Where is that?
Tribuco Canyon.
Is that kind of out in those mountains out east of Irvine?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because I went up there and did a story on Black Star Canyon.
Mm-hmm. It's around that area.
Oh, okay. That seems like an all-around kind of weird and maybe not-so-nice area.
Some areas are not so nice. The biker bar's nice there.
Oh, yeah. I see a lot of motorcycles going up and down that road, too. It's not called Black Star Canyon Road, but the one that connects up with it that comes up from the freeway.
Santiago Canyon.
Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a colony of bats that lives on a bridge and on over that road, too.
Yeah, after that, you can go to, I believe it's Tribuco House up there, and we've been up there, and it's a very interesting thing. She was an actress during the 1800s, and they used to have people come in on stagecoaches up through the canyon, and they would entertain them, and she's still entertaining up there.
Who's this?
I believe it's the person that Tribuco Canyon is named after.
Oh, okay. Because there was another famous actress that lived in Orange County, Madame Majeska, that has
mm-hmm.
a statue.
Majeska,
that was it. Majeska Canyon.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Because that house is still there. It's a historical site.
Majeska, yes. And, I wanted to mention that to you because that's a local kind of haunting place.
You know, this
and,
is just...
You know, there's also in Fullerton, there used to be the Butterworth Stagecoach.
Mm-hmm.
They used to go through, and sometimes near the railroad tracks in Fullerton, you can see the stage come through.
I've heard that about the Majeska House, too.
You can see what? Repeat that.
The Stagecoach.
The Stagecoach.
The Butterfield
through.
Stage.
You can still see it sometimes pass through?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know what? I went and investigated this other, not investigated, but I did a report on it. It's a cemetery in where's the Nixon place?
San Clemente.
Yorba Linda, yeah, the Yorba Linda Cemetery. It's right in the middle of a nice neighborhood right now, but it's this old cemetery.
Yeah, it kind of really reminds you of Poltergeist, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. There's no houses built on it, but they're built all around it, and there's a park right next to it. And as a rule, I've heard cemeteries aren't haunted, but apparently there's a woman called the Pink Lady that supposedly haunts that place. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I've been out there before, yeah.
Anything to report on that graveyard, except that it's kind of weird?
You know, I don't get too many things happening in cemeteries. I can't tell you how many hours I've spent sitting in cemeteries.
Well, no, but when people get there, they're already dead. I mean, there's no trauma that really happens in a cemetery.
Unless
no,
there's some dummy like me out there raising spirits.
It's rare to find anything in the cemetery, even voices.
Uh-huh.
We prefer picking up voices in places like prisons or like we did the old Veterans Hospital.
Oh, hospitals are great, aren't they?
Especially the psychiatric wards.
Yes, you know what? Have you ever been to the Camarillo State Hospital, the one they're turning into a college now?
No, I've never been up there.
Oh, okay. I've heard things from that, reports from there, and it was one of those hospitals where people were given electroshock and ice baths and all that. And
it's Hotel California, too, isn't it?
We did the Veterans Hospital when they closed it, and it was the same thing. They did a lot of electroshock therapy in the psychiatric ward.
Yeah, and apparently
we got people screaming and all kinds of voices on tape.
Yeah, I had a friend once that he's not with us anymore, but he was a clinical psychologist, and he said I would like somebody at some point to do an experiment, paranormal PK kind of experiment in a psychiatric ward. Maybe just put a random number generator in the ward without really telling anybody about it, and see if it gets perturbed by the by whatever's going on there. Now, I don't know if anybody's done that yet.
I don't know.
Because it would go.
I know Dean Radin did a lot on random number generators.
Yes, he did. I interviewed him once for the magazine and talked to him a little bit afterwards. He actually changed my entire outlook on reality by talking to him for 6 hours. This is where
he was involved in the Princeton Project.
Yes, he knows Robert John and those people and works with them. Yes, and I think at a later date, as he became more interested in paranormal psi research, that he started working with Robert John. But his ideas are, I think that paranormal researchers, particularly people interested in hauntings and ghosts and things like that, would do well to read up on the literature by, like you said, by Dean Radin, Robert John, and people like that.
What is this random generator?
A random number generator is it's basically having a computer flip a coin for you. If it's working perfectly, it's supposed to have an equal number of ones and zeros, or yeses and nos.
Okay.
And they find that when, for instance, they have them running around the world in different laboratories, and on September 11th, they all went off the random.
They what?
And during the Academy Awards and during the O.J. Simpson, every time something affects September 11th, did I say September 11th? Anytime something affects the worldwide or a lot of people, they find a spike in positive or negative in all the random number generators.
Wow. It's like
they call those eggs.
Eggs?
I'm not sure why they call them eggs, but they do.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're right. Uh-huh.
They have the eggs all over the world. And, on September 11th, they just actually right before September, right before the plane crash.
Uh huh.
They had a spike.
Right.
So they knew something was going to happen, but they didn't know, and it happened like within minutes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like the laboratory experiments where somebody's being shown a picture, they don't know what it's going to be, and they react a split second before it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when we were doing testing for ESP.
Uh huh.
And we would have to. We would have to take notes of there's on the Zener cards there's different shapes,
right?
And when you
these are these star triangle
square
things.
Think about the shape, and they write down if it's a star or if it's a, you know, whatever it is, or they point to it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we'd have to, they would be guessing the next one, so we'd have to kind of look at it and say, okay, well, they're doing the one before, the one after is perfect. And, it's just that they were off by one.
Right, exactly. That's funny because Radin, when I interviewed him, suggested an experiment where you get somebody who's good at that, at guessing what's going to happen next. And if you can get him to do it enough times, he said that something weird might happen where things around the experiment started to happen, and all the most unlikely things would start to happen, all the way up to and including the entire area disappearing.
Wow.
Very. He said, but the thing is, I said, well, why would you want to do that experiment? You could end the world. And he said, well, we find that when, and maybe you do too, Marla, we find that when we rip into the fabric of reality or causality, that it tends to heal itself up.
Sometimes.
Sometimes, huh?
Yeah. And you can rip it.
What about, does perhaps it replaces the wounded one with a new one?
It could, and you could be in a different reality.
Right, exactly. That's another thing. You know, there's any number of possibilities if you start doing something like this. And have you ever experienced anything like that?
Well, it's kind of like playing with a Ouija board.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, there we go.
All right, it wasn't a Ouija board.
You know, and we've done that many a times. You know, we don't usually use the Ouija board itself. We make our own.
Uh-huh.
You know, we get numbers and,
right,
and letters, and we make our own circle. And my favorite movie is called The Uninvited. It was a 1940s movie with Ray Milland.
Oh, yes, I've heard of this.
And they had a perfect example of this type of seance in the movie. It's one of the best movies ever made about ghosts.
Yeah, we've got like 4 minutes left, Marla.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to ask you what I ask a lot of people, and I have one, you know, and I should ask at the beginning is, what got you into this this field, and what do you hope to accomplish by it, and what has it taught you? I mean, has it changed your outlook? Has it made you a completely different person? I know these are probably obvious answers to you, but let's let the listeners hear.
Well, I guess it did change my life because I found my soulmate.
Uh-huh.
You know, he was doing it. He was in a different field, but basically the same thing. And it was like, well, you want to go to a haunted house with me? You know,
perfect
you
first
know,
date.
Basically, it was love at first sight with us.
How about just the
reason? We've been married for 15 years. We've never had a fight.
Oh wow, it's funny because most people's
you know,
like, oh, you got to have a fight
argue,
once in a while.
We don't fight. We, you know, it's a great marriage. So yeah, I definitely changed my life.
Uh-huh.
But changed my outlook. No, I was really raised this way. You know, my mom was very open to this. You know, if I had an imaginary friend, it wasn't imaginary. You know, it was real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and my mom really helped me learn. You know, Mom and I used to play on the Ouija board.
Sounds like a great mom.
Oh, she is. She's wonderful. You know, luckily, she's still with us. I just saw her today. So,
oh, good.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
After all your investigations, and I know you're going to keep doing it, you know, have you come to any kind of conclusions as to what's going on? And, you know, how does this affect how people would look at, you know, reality, what we're doing here, what happens after we die, if anything, et cetera? I mean, have you made any kind of sweeping conclusions or theories, or you know how you feel about this people don't know about?
I know that I'm not afraid to die. I've almost died a few times.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not afraid, and I think that really helps.
Why not?
Knowing that, you know, I can come back and haunt my husband.
Why aren't you afraid?
Why aren't I afraid?
Yeah.
No need to be. There, you know, I don't know what's coming next, but I'm hoping it'll be good. You know, I don't believe in heaven or hell, in my dogma. So,
uh-huh.
You know, so I, you know, we believe in reincarnation. So, I'm hoping I'll come back as a cat. You know.
So basically, you're doing all this stuff to very strongly satisfy your own curiosity about.
It's basically it's research, and it's, you know, I'm curious.
Uh huh.
And, you know, it's like, this is what I was meant to do. You know, and you know, we try and do it as much as we can.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, we enjoy doing it. We enjoy going out and finding things that aren't there.
Or, well, that most people...
Or finding the mystery.
Yeah.
The mystery in life.
Uh-huh. And go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, it really makes life interesting.
Do you have problems with skeptical people telling you this is a dead end and you're looking at nothing and it's ridiculous? And how do you answer that?
I've learned not to argue with skeptics because you can't change their mind. That's the way they think, and I have to appreciate the way they think.
Yeah, or fundamentalist skeptics, as I call them, because real skeptics wouldn't be putting you down.
If they tell me I'm going to hell because of it, you know, that's their opinion, you know, and I'm not really, you know. That's, you know, they have the right to think what they want to think.
Exactly.
And, you know, if I can prove something, you know, my own brother and sister don't even, they're skeptical, you know, so they think it's, you know, it's kind of, you know, I'm the weird person in the family.
But that's okay. That's what people think about me, too.
Maybe they fear it, too.
You know, but I kind of like the uniqueness. You know, so I don't argue with skeptics. I let them think what they want to think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's just not worth my time to change their mind.
Perfect attitude. I've cut in here after telling Walter I wanted him to do the interview
mostly. Oh, no, please.
Anything that you wanted to add or ask, Walter? We should be off at 10, but it doesn't matter because the next person isn't here, so we can talk, you know, a little bit longer.
No, I appreciate you, you know, coming on and sharing with the listeners what you've shared with me already, a lot of it. But yet there's also some great new stuff that you talked about that we're going to have to, you know, explore some more. And
oh, that kind of stuff for you. But I appreciate being on with you guys. It's great. It's really fun.
I hope that usually when people come on, I try to, you know, like, don't play Ghostbusters. Of course, I never do that. but, you know, I hope that some of the questions that get asked and some of the areas we get into aren't things that you usually get asked when you're in an interview situation, because that's what this show is for. And if you ever want to come on again, we'd love to have you. And maybe as we get further into the book, it'll be imperative that you come back and talk with us.
Oh, anytime. And I'm looking forward to meeting you guys in person.
No, we're going to make that happen. We're
going
to make that happen. We want to meet both you and David in person and get the details that we might have not touched on or thought to ask about.
Oh, great. That would be perfect.
And the last thing I always ask is, do you have care to announce a website or book or anything like that where people can learn more about you, or is it pretty much a personal thing?
It's a personal thing. If they want to write me, they can write to my email address, which is ghostlady@socal.rr.com.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to answer anybody's questions or whatever if they want to say hi.
Okay, great. Okay, we've been talking with Marla James, paranormal investigator, and as always, you hear questions and things that you wouldn't hear on other shows, and maybe someday it'll be listened to by a lot more people. All right, thanks so much for being on tonight.
Yeah, thanks again,
you.
Marla.
Okay, bye. Radio Mysterioso.
Oh, hey, thanks again.
This and we've been talking with Marla James.
Pardon?
Ghost investigations, which, you know what, if you've listened to the show for a long time, you realize that it's exactly the same kind of thing we've been talking about for the entire arc of the show. It's just from a different viewpoint, right? Right? Any last-minute calls, 213-252-0998, and we'll be back next week, either the music or more interviews. It's been real interview heavy the last couple of months, but I don't mind because it was music heavy for months before that. Let's see, how about another Messerchup song, Intro Monstro Crescendo, which I've played before, but it's such a great song. Radio Mysterioso.
Monsters to be pitied, monsters to be despised. A night with the ghouls, the ghouls reborn from the innermost depths of the world.
All others were but infinitesimal bits of fluff compared to her. This one would have died for feathers, furs, and fluff. And so she did.
Well, 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 well.